Toks Knusum Slama. Thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon from community-supported KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. You may also join us via our live stream on YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or on KTOO's Instagram and Facebook pages. For today, November 20th, 2025, the annual journal title Echoes, which publishes literary works from Southeast Alaskans, is looking for your work for its next issue. We'll chat with poet and faculty advisor on the project, Emily Wall. Another annual tradition around the country and now in Juneau, Theatre Alaska presents once again Dickens' A Christmas Carol. We chat with a few of the actors, including Scrooge himself, about this production, which will be up and all around Juneau this December. And Chancellor Dr. Aparna Palmer is here to share with us some updates on happenings at the University of Alaska Southeast, including a cool partnership with Gold Belt on a traditional canoe. Those conversations coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. You are listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Auk Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on the live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I'm Boston Christopher. Ever wanted to be a published writer or artist? Well, now is your chance. The literary and arts journal Title Echoes is now seeking submissions. You have until December 1st, and it's open to all residents that live in communities in Southeast Alaska. And I am joined now by poet, professor, and faculty advisor, Emily Wall. Gunath Cheesh, Wasiyati. How are you today, Emily?
Gunath Cheesh, I'm good. Thank you for having me on today.
Okay, so this is really cool. Title Echoes has been around for at least a quarter century, if not longer. And I wanted to start there. I wanted to start with the history. How did it begin, Title Echoes?
Yeah, that's a great question. So many years ago, there was a journal called Explorations that was published out of UAS, but was not for Southeast Alaska. It was a national journal. And when that faculty member left, there was no journal. So at the time, faculty member Alexis Easley and I wrote a grant. This was in 2002. To the Chancellor's Special Project Fund, and that was John Pugh at the time, asking if he would fund a journal that would be published by UAS for UAS students is kind of how it started, and then it evolved from there.
Okay. So you were trying to continue the tradition of publishing something at the university, but you wanted to make it a little bit more locally focused.
Yeah, Alaskans weren't really getting published in Explorations. And so the original grant was for UAS to publish a journal that would publish UAS students, which it did for like the first 4 years. And then when I took over as faculty advisor in 2007, we evolved it a little bit. So it became a regional journal publishing writers and artists who live in Southeast Alaska. And it also became student edited. So we kind of changed the structure a little bit to give students an internship that would teach them how to be editors.
Oh, how did it work before that?
I think primarily, I wasn't here in those early years, but I think Alexis and then Ernestine after me primarily were choosing work. I think Ernestine is probably the first person that brought in some students and had them support her. And choosing work. And then it evolved into students being the editors instead of faculty. Like I'm an advisor and I help and teach, but they are really the editors of the journal.
That's really cool because it gives them that experience, right? It gives them the experience to say, hey, I did this. Like even when they graduate, they can say, I published this. I was the editor on this literary and arts journal.
That's, yeah, It's exactly. And most journals are published by grad students as editors. Mm. It's very unusual for undergrads. As far as we know, we're the only one that has an undergrad publishing a regional journal.
Wow.
We have three a year. So I counted up. I think we've had something like 57 student editors over the time that I've been working on this.
Wow. That's amazing.
No, okay. It's pretty cool.
So I'm curious about this part, the publishing actually aspect of mm-hmm. it. Like, where do you end up publishing the journal? Who actually does the printing?
Alaska Litho, actually.
Oh, okay.
They've been a fantastic community partner. So we work with them starting at the beginning of the year. Every year we kind of set up deadlines and that kind of thing. And then Annie Controle is the graphic designer. She's fantastic. So we give her a huge document and a lot of art, and she actually designs it and then comes back to us for galley proofs, and the students have a chance to go to Litho and actually like watch some of the printing.
Oh,
it's
awesome.
Actually really cool. So yeah. They collaborate with Litho, and they just do a fantastic job.
Now, these students that you're advising, are they all like English majors, or are they all writing or arts majors? How does it work? Can any student be involved in Title Echoes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say probably 90% of them are English majors, but they don't have to be.
Mm-hmm.
I like to see them have at least a couple of creative writing workshops under their belt, usually 2 to 3, and then they apply.
Mm-hmm.
So English majors do need some kind of internship to graduate, so a lot of them are interested in this.
But I see. Okay.
They apply, and then the students working this year and I sort of look at options and choose the students for the next year that we think are the best fit for the journal.
That's awesome. And then I know you have a copy there of last year's journal, right?
Yeah.
And is this published? It's Title Echoes is done once a year.
Once a year, yep.
Okay, yeah. And it comes out in April, the first weekend of April, and you always have a launch party, and usually you'll come on the show and talk about that too, and we'll get to see the actual, which one it is. But right now, you're looking for submissions. So how do you, all Southeast residents are open for this, and what kind of stuff should they submit? Is it poems, writing, artwork? Is it all of the above?
All of the above.
All of the above. So anything that can be printed, basically, right?
Exactly. And we also encourage artists, 3D artists, to take excellent photographs. We're also interested in, like, dancers. I mean, anybody who can turn their art into something that could be on the page is eligible.
So you could take a photo of a dance position or performance and,
totally.
And submit that.
Okay. We would love that. Yeah.
Now, this is an interesting one because, like, that looks like it has some form line on it, right? In terms of the design, which is cool. And does each year have a theme, or how do you go about picking the material? How does that work?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've intentionally not gone for a theme because I don't want to dictate what we should write about. One of the things that we have loved is we want this journal to be a reflection of what Southeast Alaskans are thinking and dreaming and fighting about and discussing. and it's one of my favorite things in January. We sit down and just read over 1,000 pages of material. And sometimes themes do emerge.
Mm.
You know, we just kind of see, like, wow, this is what the community is thinking or talking about. Other years, it's more subtle. But it's always fascinating to me just to see what people are bringing. What are they working on? How are they influencing each other?
Mm.
It's really kind of a cool thing to watch happen.
Do students, the editors, sometimes submit their own work as well? And then do they check each other's work? How does that work? If I'm an editor, but I also want my own thing in the journal.
You just don't get to.
Sorry.
If you're editing or you're on the editorial board, you cannot submit.
Okay. Yeah. I guess that's a good rule. Wait till you graduate. And then come back and submit it
exactly.
As a community member. Because community members can submit. So you have been doing this since 2007, you said?
Yeah, my 19th year of this project.
That's amazing. So I'm curious about what you've seen in terms of the changes over time in terms of either subject matter or writing styles or, I guess, artwork too. What have you seen over the course of these 20 years working on this journal?
That's a great question. It amazes me the work that these communities are producing. I mean, truly beautiful stuff. I would say in terms of evolution, every year we pick a featured artist and writer, and we try to draw from all the communities. And one thing I've noticed is when we have an artist from a community that's not Juneau, often the next year we'll get a lot of submissions from that community. So we work really hard to, like, you know, to reach out to all of the villages and towns. But for example, we'd had a lot of trouble getting work from Wrangell, and then we featured Vivian Faith Prescott. Mm. And she became this like fantastic ambassador for Tyleco. So she's running around Wrangell getting people to submit, you know, and Heather Lendy did the same thing in Haines.
Right.
And so we try really hard to not have it be just a Juneau, Ketchikan, Sitka journal, but to try to get all communities. And I love that more and more we're seeing like work from all of the communities.
I mean, I guess our current writer laureate for the state, Vera Starbard, is from Juneau, so I guess you don't need more inspiration from Juneau, but maybe she could inspire people in the towns and villages to submit work, because that's kind of cool that it is open to, it's anybody in Southeast, right?
Anybody who lives full-time in Southeast. So you
full-time.
Can't just come here in July. Like, you have to actually have an address here. And then, of course, students. We want to publish students, too.
Right, to students, yeah. And how many pieces usually typically end up in the journal? Does it just depend on the year?
It does. We get between 300 and 350 submissions, which mm-hmm. again is over 1,000 pages. And I would say on average, probably 20 to 40 writing, and then probably similar to art, maybe 15 to 30 pieces of art. Mm-hmm. So it does kind of vary a little bit year to year.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. That's kind of cool. And do we know who your featured person is? Are you able to announce that as of yet?
I would love to, yeah. So our featured writer this year is poet Jonas Lamb.
Okay.
And he is a professor of library science at the University of Alaska, and he just had a new book come out, What Turtle Blood Tastes Like. It's a fantastic book. I love this book. And then our artist is Davina Cole, and she's an incredible local weaver. She also works at UAS with the Northwest Coast Program on Arts. And it's just a fantastic artist. So this year it happened to be two UAS people. That's a little bit unusual, but we love their work.
We had Jonas on the show to talk about his new book, which was awesome. Also, listeners may know that he does also have a show. He's a DJ on KRNN. And so that's kind of cool. And Davina's been on the show as well before. Fantastic artists, both of them. That's really cool that they're doing that. So that's going to inspire the students even more, maybe.
Yes. And that's the idea, is we showcase their work and they do a talk in April, and we also do an interview with them. So my fall editor got to sit down with them and really learn from them.
Mm.
And we hope that the interview and the work will really inspire writing and art students at UAS, as well as any writers or artists in the community that want to learn from them.
That's really cool. And so I guess the question is, if I am, because, you know, I also think about people who are writing, not necessarily in secret, but they haven't been published before. It's a little scary to mm-hmm. sort of submit your work, and you know, especially if you haven't done that before. Do you have any advice for folks who might be a little hesitant to submit their work?
That's a really great question. First of all, I would say that it isn't an indicative of whether or not you're a good writer or a good artist,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I tell this to my students all the time. I get rejections all the time. I mean, a lot of rejections, right? I think it's more a matter of just putting your work out there and seeing who it might speak to. It's not necessarily you're a good writer, you're a bad writer, but my poem speaks to this particular journal. It's found its little home there, or your piece of art has found its home in this journal, but maybe not this journal. So I think it's really, I mean, I almost joke that it's sort of like dating. Like, you just got to find your match more than try to take the pressure off of like, oh, I'm now a good writer, or no, I'm not a good writer. That's not what it's about. It's just finding its home.
Getting accepted into a journal doesn't make you good or bad, right?
Yeah, exactly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it may be that it depends on the amount of work that you get submitted, the kinds of themes that might start to emerge, and you're picking pieces. And I'm sure it must be difficult on the student editors to say no, right? To say, like, yeah. they must get to a point where they've got this one and this one, but there's only room for one. And like, how do they, that's not an easy position to be in.
It's really complicated. We go through a pretty extensive process. We do a first big read, and then we have a whole editorial board.
Mm.
So then it goes to them, the second batch, and people score it. And then we have a meeting where we do all this passionate debating where I'm like, this has to go in. And my students are like, no, this has to go in.
Right.
But it is really difficult because the work is all amazing.
Yeah.
And it's, we wish we could publish everything. But like you said, sometimes themes emerge and the board changes every year. So what appeals to some people maybe doesn't appeal to people the next year. And that's the other thing I say too, if you don't get in this year, year, send it next year. It's right. a different group of people reading your work. So
yeah.
it may connect with them.
The opportunity can change every year, and mm-hmm. That's really cool. So how do people submit?
Yes, great question. So there is a link on the Title Echoes page. So the easiest thing is just to Google Title Echoes submissions. First hit will be it. And you submit through a program called Submittable. It's a free program. It doesn't spam you. It takes 20 seconds to set up. And you put in your name, your address, that kind of thing, and then you just upload your work. It's really straightforward. And then the whole editorial team has access to that, so we can go through and look at all the submissions.
Okay, and that is due by December 1st. Is that December 1st, like midnight on November, whatever it is, or is it 5 p.m. on December 1st, or when do I have to get my stuff in by?
Midnight December 1st.
Midnight on December 1st, so yes. 11:59 p.m. December 1st.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's the thing. Yeah, because sometimes those deadlines kind of get squishy. Right? Squishy. But this, you know, in terms of when it is. Yeah. But this is 11:59 on December 1st. So you've got, what is that, a couple more weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
If you have things that you've been working on or things that you want to be working on, it's artwork, it's poetry, it's prose, it's stories, it's, you know, pictures of performances that you want to have published. I love that the opportunity for dance to create some kind of image with your dance and take a photo of that. I think that's very cool. Title Echoes has, what year is this going to be for Title Echoes then total?
This will be the 24th year that the journal's been published.
24th year. So next year, we're going to be at a quarter century.
I know. That's a big year. We got to think about that one.
The silver anniversary, as it were.
Exactly.
Emily Wall, faculty advisor, professor out at UAS, and poet. Awesome poet in her own right. Don't forget to go see her show, which is at the City Museum. All about dogs in and around Douglas and Juneau. It runs, I guess, through the end of this month, right? And you said people are still like adding on their own stories and things about their own dogs.
It's so cool. We put up two blank canvases as a community collage, and I went to check on it yesterday, and a ton of new stuff is up. So if you want to bring a drawing or a photo or a small poem, come pin it up. It's up till the 30th.
That's fantastic. I love that so much. Gwyneth Cheese for being here, Emily. Thank you so much. Again, the best way to find out information is just to put into your favorite search engine, Title Echoes UAS Submissions, and the page will come up and learn more information about it. And can you order back issues of Title Echoes?
Someone asked me that for the first time. We don't have them, but I'm pretty sure if you call up Litho, they have all the files.
They could probably
print one for you. And the libraries have the full archive.
Although, so you could check it out from the library,
yeah, absolutely.
Or at least view it and see what has been published in the past. I think for the 25th anniversary, that would be really cool to like do some kind of collection or something from the past, like selections from each journal, which would be really difficult to do, but I'm just brainstorming, I'm just spitballing right now, but I think it would be really cool, be difficult for the students. But anyway, Emily, thank you so much, Gwyneth Cheese, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Gwyneth Cheese, thanks, Boston.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Up next, we'll talk with the cast from A Christmas Carol. Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. Swarthmore College in Pennsylvania will soon heat and cool its buildings by using the ground as a giant thermal battery. The college is building a central geo-exchange plant connected to pipes that stretch 800 feet underground. In summer, the system pulls heat from buildings, transfers it to water in the pipes, and then pumps the warm water underground to store the heat in the earth.
In the winter, the system runs in the opposite direction. We extract heat from the ground, lift the temperature of that water using the geo-exchange plant, and then send that warm water to our campus buildings to heat them.
Elizabeth Drake is the Assistant Vice President for Sustainability and Strategic Initiatives at Swarthmore. The geo-exchange system will run on renewable energy and replace the school's aging heating system, which runs on fossil fuels. So it will help Swarthmore reach its goal of eliminating or offsetting all of its carbon pollution by 2035. The system is under construction, but a few buildings are already hooked up. And Drake says that students and faculty are excited.
And I think that the commitment to climate action and decarbonization that we're doing through this project is a point of pride for the campus.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
Mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing. Oh, yes, there will be much mistletoeing for sure. You are listening to Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. A family tradition for many and a tale as classic as time can create. Theater Alaska presents Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol, adapted for the stage by Arlisha Jones and Michael Evan Haney. It's running most of December in and around town. We'll get to those dates and times in a little bit. You can head to theateralaska.org. That's theater with an E-R, theateralaska.org for all of the details. But I am joined in the studio now to talk about this wonderful production by Dakota Neonakis. Welcome back. Kwasiati Gunathchish. How are you, Dakota?
Good. How are you?
I'm excellent.
Good.
And I also have in the studio, I have Connor Lendrum. Welcome in, Kwasiati. How are you, Connor?
Gunathchish, Boston. I'm so glad to be here. I'm doing all right. How are you?
I'm excellent. And we have Scrooge himself. We have Tom Robinault in the studio as well. Tom, thank you for joining us. Wasiati.
Thank you.
From your office down the hall.
Yeah. Tom 6 feet away.
Tom works here at KTOO as our development director. And so it's so wonderful to have him also on the stage. Many of people have seen. If you saw Christmas Carol last year in and around town, it was the first year that Theater Alaska did it, but it's becoming an annual tradition. And Tom was in it as well, and Connor. Dakota, I don't think you were in it last year, were you?
I was.
You were in
yes.
it last year. Okay, yeah, pardon
you,
me.
You got
it's
all.
Okay.
You got all the vets
yes.
here.
You got
oh,
all
geez.
The. I got the vets. Okay, thank you, Fiordalinos, for sending in the vets. So let's get to the wonderful specifics of this, because Theater Alaska, for those who don't know, is known for performing in and around town.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be, usually there's a lot of shows that happen in the summer, and they're done in like parks, and they're done in out at the Treadwell office building and
yes.
things like that. But this is like winter time. It's a little bit colder. So I'm assuming that most of your performances are inside.
I mean, surprisingly, all of them are inside.
True.
But we will still be traveling around Juneau. While the bulk of our performances will be at Meek Feeders Hall, we're also going to be at Riverview Senior Assisted Living and the Pioneer Home, TMMS, the Egan and Valley Libraries. Am I forgetting anything?
Yep, you'll be at the Egan Library. You'll be at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. And then you close out. I'll just give this for the folks. So the first weekend, which it opens December 3rd. So you're playing most of December. You open mm-hmm. Wednesday, December 3rd, with some limited seating at both of these first two performances. One's at the Juneau Pioneer Home, the next day out at Riverview Senior Living. And then you do the Egan Library, which is interesting because the Noise Pavilion is usually where Theater Alaska performs, but I'm assuming that's going to be a little too chilly. So I'm glad you're inside.
I'm ready. I mean, like, if we get, like, a public movement going on right now to be like, you know, please petition Theater Alaska to get us perform outside for Christmas Carol.
So you can get everybody sick. I think that would be wonderful. And then you're going to be at the library, the public library, the Valley Library, that Sunday. So that's the first weekend. Then you go for a week at McFeeters Hall. And then your last week, you're going to be at Thunder Mountain Middle School. And that goes all the way to Sunday, December 21st. So right up to the holidays, pretty much. So you mm-hmm. can get your family out to these performances. They are pay-as-you-can,
mm-hmm.
right? For McFeeters Hall and Thunder Mountain Middle School, you can go to theateralaska.org if you want to get a ticket in advance and do a pay-as-you-can over the website, I'm assuming. So that's where you are going to be performing. And I believe that the director of the show is Fiordalina Lagandino, the producing artistic director,
that is correct.
Right, Tom? Okay. Yeah. And you have a cast of thousands.
Seems like
1,000 children.
I do have a full list of people, but I'd really want to talk to you all about. Let's start with you, Dakota. So tell me, because this year I heard that actors are playing multiple roles. Sometimes
yes.
that happened last year, but a lot of actors are taking on more responsibilities this year, except for Tom. He's the lazy one, just gets to play one part. So tell me who you're playing, Dakota.
Yes, I am playing Belle, Lucy, and Culpepper. and The Christmas Yet to Come.
Christmas. Oh, that's the one that's in the shrouded hood. You don't have to. You don't have to learn any lines for that.
No, it's so easy.
You just have to point.
Yes. Nod my head. Yes.
That's right. So Belle is. Tell me who Belle is.
Belle is Scrooge's ex-lover.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yes.
The one that, so that's from the past, right?
Yes.
Okay, that's the one that sends him down the spiral a little bit.
Yes.
Right? He chooses business over love.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I hope I'm not ruining the story for anybody.
I think it's all around us, so it's okay.
Hashtag spoilers, right?
Right.
If you haven't seen A Christmas Carol, no, there's so many different versions of Christmas Carol that you've probably seen. Who's Culpepper?
Culpepper is a rich snob, in my opinion, who doesn't want to give to the poor, and
he
decides that they should rather live on the streets than give money.
I see. Okay, awesome. And then you have one other, Lucy.
Lucy. She is Fred and Wilhelmina's friend.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she goes to the parties and spends time with them during the holidays.
We have a really fun party scene together. I play Fred, and Lucy's one of the guests at our Christmas party.
I see. Okay. And are you one of the people who had to take on additional responsibilities this year?
Yeah.
Yeah. Which roles did you add to your docket?
Just Belle.
Okay, Belle.
So
but that's
promoted.
A big one. That's a big one, right?
That is a big one. Yeah.
That's a big piece of it. Okay. Yeah. And then Connor, you played Fred last year, but you have some new roles.
I do. I only have one additional role, and then I have a switch. So last year I was Fred and Young Scrooge. This year I am Fred, Mr. Fezziwig, and Old Tom.
Old Tom. Who's Old Tom?
Old Tom. Owns a rag and bone shop. So basically he's a pawn shop owner in Victorian London. Yeah. And so he's a vinegary old kind of guy and spends Christmas buying a bunch of dead guy stuff.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Okay.
As one does.
As one does. And then, Tom, you're playing Scrooge McDuck, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
How's my Scottish accent down?
Nice. So, Tom, tell me what it's like to play Scrooge in a second incarnation when you sort of revise the show. Obviously, there's more children this year, so it's probably changed the rehearsal period a little bit. But are you able to step right back into the performance? Do you start where you ended last year? Or are you sort of re-looking at things and trying to figure new things out?
It's definitely tempering back into the water at first and going, okay, this is how it felt, relearning things and not really, I guess, necessarily relearning, but getting familiar again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I feel like now it's starting to take off a little bit. But it is different. It's an interesting way to do a role, to have something that you do once a year and go back to. So there's a lot of things that lines that I've not missed as in forgot them, but I'm interpreting them in a different way now, or things that I'm hearing differently because there's other characters, other actors playing other characters that I interact with. That I'm hearing it differently, and just other things that I'm just hearing differently. Christmas Carol is a classic, and classics become classics because the language is thick, even though it may not seem like it. There's a lot to it. And I guess that's part of our jobs anyhow, is to make it seem effortless. But there's a lot of thought into it.
And is there any change in style of the show this year, last year? Because the thing about Theater Alaska, when you move around to different locations, it's a little bit different here where you're able to settle in. Like this, you're kind of doing a week here, a week there, a week here, kind of. Mm-hmm. You're able to maybe have a little bit more stability when it comes to the movement. But is there anything that changed in terms of the style of the show?
I wouldn't say necessarily it changed the style, but there's more additions.
I see.
I would say there's more of the style this year,
and
that we're reworking some of that style. So even if you saw it last year, you would remember the transitions, people moving furniture and these canvas sheets flying and all this kind of actor interactive kind of moving set pieces and scene changes and things happening throughout the scenes. That's all slightly different this year. And we're adding on to that. So there's more of that kind of what I call blanket fort theater.
Mm-hmm.
It's this kind of interactive, this interactive kind of theater that the actors move all the stuff. They make the shapes. They make the set. They make all that in front of your eyes.
And is it, because I know you're at a couple different places, but are you adding, like, Thunder Mountain is a theater. So are you adding lighting this year?
I don't know.
Okay.
We'll find out. We haven't gotten to that point, but that is definitely going to be a challenge because, you know, crossing in the McFeeters stage is going to be quite different than crossing into, you know. Into
Thunder Mountain's a big 400-seat theater, right? Yeah. I mean, it's a big space.
Unless so they draw in the legs or something. I'm not quite sure how that'll work.
Okay. That's kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And Dakota, you said you added Belle on to your docket of roles this year. What's it been like to sort of step into that role?
It's been really interesting. You know, I've only seen it happen, so to be in it, it's really cool to just interact with the other people that I wouldn't interact with. So
Right. You get to discover new things,
yes,
right?
Yes.
And who do you work with? Who's young Scrooge this year if you're not young Scrooge?
A young man named Tyler.
Tyler,
What's Tyler's last name?
That's a great question.
You. It's Tyler Benavides.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, yes. That's my young Scrooge.
Yeah. So that's kind of fun. So you guys are working together.
Yeah.
I saw this show last year. I don't remember... Mm-hmm. Who was who, but I can mention a couple other names that we have here. I think this is the full list. Cast, Tom Robinall, so we know that, Ebenezer Scrooge. So there's Christina Apathy, Valerie Lindegaard, Connor, Brian Crowder is back, Noah Carlson is back, Dakota is here again. Kristen Rankin, I believe she might be a new member of the cast.
She is.
She's a new member, but people know Kristen around town from different things. Grady Wright, Tyler Benavides is playing Apprentice Scrooge, The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. And also Emmett Ryan is in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And then I believe we're going to start naming off a bunch of these kids here in a second, but Cora Barr, Alani Mateo, Errol Colbreth, Loki, Koneman. Ila Menino, sorry if I'm butchering your names, but I just want to try to get everybody a shout out. Tegan McNeil, Amelia Farrell, Zuji McFarlane, Natalie Fortier, Emil Mackey, Kesa Spickler, Audrey Burke, Maeve Propsom, Frasia Dukes, Amaya Criswell, Casey Christensen, Nora DeSluver. Wow, that is, is that everybody? I think that might, oh, wait.
That doesn't sound like enough. I'm going to be honest, that sounds short.
Amelia Feliciano Soto, Daryl Lagandino, that's the cast. And then there's also musicians Deborah Wood, Grace mm-hmm. Padrone, Ila Menino, Zuji McFarlane, and Valerie Lindegaard. So some of the people are playing roles as well as musicians.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's kind of cool. Wow, what a good time.
It's a really talented group of people. And, like, it's really great kind of going to these rehearsals and, like, you have a room full of people with all these different skills, some of them who are there last year, some of them who are new this year, and it feels different and it feels the same. And it's great also seeing different, like, for example, like, last year we had Roblin, and he did a great job, but he's not in the cast this year. And Brian is playing Marley's ghost, and he does it a totally different way. And so, like, while I agree that, like, the style of the show isn't different, the different scenes do have different textures and shapes to them because it's different actors interpreting the roles differently.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, I don't know, it's really an education for someone who's, like, not as experienced an actor like myself. Like, I've only done it a couple of years, and it's really great to kind of see, like, these more experienced actors be able to sort of show this range of what you can do and, like, be able to sort of compare and contrast of being, like, last year, like, oh, I saw this skilled actor do this scene really well, and then I'm seeing this other skilled actor do this scene really well in a totally different way that feels totally different. And it's, I don't know, it's exciting.
Yeah, that's kind of cool. And Tom, when you are doing Christmas or holiday, let's say holiday shows, like, these are a big thing that people do, and actors do them, and they become roles that they take on every year.
Yeah.
Why is it, what does it do for you as an actor in terms of doing a holiday show? What is the thing that draws you to wanting to be in something like A Christmas Carol?
Job security. No, I don't know. I feel like for me, I don't have an immediate family around me here in Juneau, so it's kind of like, I always find that those shows you find a family in a way, and around the holidays especially. Mm-hmm. And so that's really nice. And there's always this, you know, there's an excitement in the air when the holidays are here anyhow. Mm-hmm. And then it's added when you're doing a production. Mm. And for me, and especially in the dark, rainy, who knows if it's going to snow or rain this year kind of environment, it really does lift your spirits. And, and Christmas Carols has got a great message. It's a redemption story, and everyone has a moment of redemption.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's really what brings me back. And also seeing the audiences. Mm-hmm. Walking out smiling and ready for Christmas now, or ready for whatever holiday they celebrate.
Yeah. And I love that it's a family show.
Yeah.
You can bring your kids to every year as they grow up, and they get to see that show and hear that story and think about that. And Dakota, what about you? What do you feel like in terms of holiday shows? Do you feel that they give you something different than, say, a different kind of show that you might do?
Yeah. I love holidays. Mm-hmm. Any holidays, I love them, and especially this time of year. And I don't know, it just brings so much joy to myself. And like Tom said, I love seeing everybody getting the Christmas cheer.
And you're rehearsing around the Thanksgiving holiday, and so, you know, I'm sure, well, you're probably not rehearsing on Thanksgiving.
No,
I would hope not.
Thanksgiving off.
Thanksgiving is off.
But then you pick it right up because you got to go into you're performing the next week. I believe it is.
Yeah,
that's kind of cool. So, but I totally feel that in terms of like it really has like the family connection, and it sort of warms your heart, right? And at this time of year, especially in Juneau, we need some warmth, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
we need some
light.
Warmth and some light and some love. And that you can get that from A Christmas Carol. This is adapted by Arlisha Jones and Michael Evan Haney. And Arlisha Jones, for those who don't know, is a writer who artist who lives up in Anchorage and has lived for years and years. I used to direct some of her plays back in the day, and I love that her work is getting out there and that this play continues to live on. It is Theater Alaska's A Christmas Carol. It is running from December 3rd through December 21st all around town. They're going to be at the Pioneer Home and the Riverview Senior Living, and out at the libraries, the Egan Library as well as the Valley Library, McFeeters Hall, and Thunder Mountain Middle School. You can find the full list of performances and times and days of the week at theateralaska.org. That's theater with an E-R, theateralaska.org. Hoping that it becomes an annual tradition and that you all will come back again next year and visit us and talk a little bit more about A Christmas Carol. Bah humbugging.
Thank you for having us on, Boston.
Of course. Connor, Tom, Dakota, I really appreciate you all being here. Thanks so much. Gunchish.
Thank
you.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Bird Note. Birder and author Christian Cooper says listening to birds helped him unlock a kind of superpower.
It's very exciting because it's like you have a sixth sense that most people don't have. You know, I'm walking through a park on my way to the gym. I am not looking or paying attention to birds, except I am, because I always am. And my ears are telling me, oh, the white-throated sparrows are back, just from hearing their call notes.
Christian says sound mnemonics are a great way to learn bird calls. Some birds have well-known mnemonics, like the, oh, sweet Canada, 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 of the white-throated sparrow. But you can also make up your own.
One of the things I really love doing is making the connections, like I call the blue jay the Rihanna bird, because Rihanna has a song, Shut Up and Drive, where one of the parts of the song is where she goes, so if you want me, let me know, no, no. And I hear that, and I'm like, well, that's the same thing a blue jay does, what it's called. It's not just a flat sound, it drops at the end. So it's going, jang, yang, yang.
Looking for more tips on birding by ear? Start at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Jonese Franklin.
Sunny Porch, a song by the band Sunny Porch, which just released their album, The Sound of This Place. We did a special show with them this Tuesday on Juno Afternoon. That post is now up. You can go listen to the podcast or check out that episode on YouTube, on KTOO's YouTube page. They sung some songs, and we talked about the creation of that album from Sunny Porch. That's Melanie Brown and Marcus Beckman. You can check that out on Juno Afternoon. KTO.org/JunoAfternoon. We're here in Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. The semester is wrapping up out at the University of Alaska Southeast soon, but the education never stops. collaborations, events, and more on the docket today as I welcome Chancellor Dr. Aparna Palmer back to Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson. Gunath Cheesh, thank you so much. It's nice to see you, Aparna. Wasiati, how are you?
Good. Thank you for having me here. Gunath Cheesh to you as well.
Yes, I can't wait to chat. We've been focusing on the Evening at Egan series this fall, so we haven't seen you for a couple of months. But it's always a pleasure when you come in and give us some updates. And before we begin,
yes.
I know we usually talk at the end about our tardigrades, our polychaetes, our Ani. What was the third one? The Ani conference. But you mentioned last time that you were going to be doing some potential looking into some Southeast tardigrades with a student. Did that happen?
It hasn't happened yet.
Okay.
Due to my incredibly busy schedule.
Yeah, you're the chancellor.
But I really want it to happen.
Yeah, hey, people out at UAS, make room for the chancellor to do some research with the student on the tardigrades in Southeast, because I want to know.
I want to know as well. I mean, we're surrounded by mosses, and that's right. Where most of the described species of tardigrades have been found. And we have ocean, and that's where the other tardigrades are
Yeah, found. So it's going to be fun. And for those who haven't heard before, Dr. Aparna Palmer's work is in biology and these tardigrades and these polychaetes, sea worms, water bears, and things like of the like. And also, you also, though, have an English degree as well, right?
Yes, I have a bachelor's of arts in English,
okay.
A bachelor of science in biology, and then my PhD is in marine biology.
Is in marine biology, okay. Yeah and so, but as a chancellor, once you move into administration, you get a little busy and you don't get to do as much of the thing that you started out doing sometimes.
Yeah, I loved every single day of being a professor,
mm-hmm.
And I still love talking to students and teaching, but Once you become an administrator, you can get quite busy and focused.
Yeah, but it also gives you the opportunity to create new things and new wonderful things. Like, I heard there's this cool partnership with Gold Belt that you're working on. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Oh my gosh, this is so exciting. And I want to begin by thanking the Gold Belt Heritage Foundation for working with us on it. Essentially, our master carver, Wayne Price, is carving a traditional cedar dugout canoe for the foundation, and he's doing it on the UAS campus with the help of apprentices, with the help of student carvers, and he has invited K through 12 students to witness the process, which is amazing, amazing.
So is there going to be like certain days of the week where he's out there working with the students that people could come and witness, or how does that work?
Yeah, I think there are days that he's going to be out there. He's on our Lakeside campus here in Juneau, and he's actually outside under a little bit of a covering. There are special visits that K through 12 students will be making. So, for example, they came out for a blessing of the log ceremony earlier this month, where they gathered around the log, and Professor Price talked about the significance of the carving, the process. So it was a really special moment. And I think if the public would like to come, I would invite them to contact UAS. They can contact the Chancellor's office to see what would be a good time for them to visit if they're interested.
If you have a student who may not be in one of those classes that's able to go and see it, that would be really kind of interesting. And then, so you're saying that there's also students at UAS who are acting as apprentices with him.
Yeah, so he has apprentices, he has student carvers, and so, you know, as you know, students can take carving classes at UAS, and so this can be part of their learning experience where they learn how to carve different items, but they get to witness and participate in the carving of a canoe, which is amazing, extraordinary. We are very, very honored that this is happening on the UAS campus.
And then you said it's for the Gold Belt Foundation, right? But and so where will it live once it's completed?
I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, I'm curious about that, like what their plan is. I mean, obviously it takes a while. I'm sure it's going to be a bit of time as they continue to work on it, like through like next semester probably at least, right?
Yeah, I think they have a very clear plan. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I don't know what that is, but
you're on a
need-to-know
basis.
I guess so.
But it is happening, and you can contact UAS and find out more. Of course, everything we're talking about you can find or put in your favorite search engine, but you go to uas.alaska.edu, and there'll be information and press releases and all that kind of stuff about these things, which is kind of cool.
Definitely.
Okay, so that's some on-site learning that is happening right there at the campus, but there's also opportunities at UAS to go elsewhere.
Yes, I'm totally excited that we are offering a course that will take students to Greece.
Ooh, nice.
So this is Ancient Greek Thought and Traditions. It is a spring 2026 course. It will occur from March 6th through the 14th. And the focus of the course will be to really live out where the ancient Greek literature first came to life, learn about the philosophy, ancient religion, democracy, but you get to do it in Greece, which is phenomenal. And this year, we're actually inviting community members to apply to go on the trip. And so if they want, they can certainly go along with the students and the professors on the course.
Oh, that's kind of cool. So, I mean, I'm assuming students are getting, what kind of credit would that be? I mean, obviously, is that in the arts and or humanities area?
So it would be an English credit.
English credit.
Yeah,
okay.
If they want to take it for credit, it would be an upper division English credit.
I see.
Yeah. And or by several credits.
Right,
actually.
Several credits. Because, but even though it's only a week, but it's going to be an intense time.
Yeah. You know, I have taught courses like that go abroad, and mm-hmm. those are really special courses. Mm-hmm. You know, not only are you kind of learning each day and experiencing things, you are basically living 24/7 mm-hmm. with your professors, with mm-hmm. your students, and that creates a special bond. Mm-hmm. When people travel together, they get to know each other sooner, faster, deeper than mm-hmm. they would if they saw each other maybe once a week for an entire semester.
I feel like it's the best test of any relationship, whether it's a friendship, whether it's a partnership, whether it's a marriage. It's the best test. Traveling is the thing, because then you can see whether you're compatible travelers or not, because everybody's different, right? Everybody accepts things a different way. Everybody's, you know, some people want to be rigid and scheduled. Some people want to be relaxed and just go with the flow. And, you know, some other people are in between. I found that the road trips are really the best, because then you're really,
yes.
you have all that time on the road.
Yes. Yeah. I love it when people travel together, and I've really enjoyed all of the travel I've done as a biologist. And you're absolutely right. You discover who a person is
yeah.
when you travel with them and you spend a lot of, you know, intensive time with them. I learned a lot about my students when I traveled with them, mm-hmm. and those students that I travel with, I still keep in touch with them today.
Like you said, because it creates a different bond, right?
Yes.
It creates a different bond and a shared experience that you don't necessarily get the same way you do just in a classroom. But there's also ways to, you know, like with the dugout canoe, that's creating a different kind of experience on site,
yeah.
you know, so it's not necessarily yeah. in classroom learning. But it's, so that also becomes a family. So it's really fascinating that those are the ways that
yeah.
it works.
Well, I think it's really interesting that you kind of brought out those aspects, because, you know, UAS is really good at experiential learning.
Mm-hmm.
We're really good at integrating hands-on learning into every single discipline.
Yeah.
And so these are a couple of examples of how you can really experience things in a different way outside of the classroom. And a lot of times when you do that, when you involve yourself more fully like that, you remember things more.
Mm.
You remember the knowledge, the techniques, the processes
yeah.
More than you would if you just sat passively and listened to the information.
And you're inviting the community, as you said. So how do people, if they're interested in going on this Greece trip, what do they do? Do they go to the website again and find it?
Well, they can certainly go to the website, but I did have a email address that
okay.
they can...
If you can't find it now, I can be sure to put it on the website.
Well, I know the professor who is leading the effort. His name is Jay Schepansky. He's a professor of English.
Okay.
And so all you have to do is email Jay, and he will give you more information.
I'm sure you can find his email, his bio sheet on the website.
Well,
yeah,
yes,
it's
you can certainly find more information about him on the website. Here we go.
Oh.
I actually have it. It is j.s@alaska.edu.
Okay.
There
and
we go. I found it.
Is that J, J-A-Y?
J-A-Y.
J-A-Y.s@alaska.edu.
Yep.
Okay, great. Perfect. And then finally, you have another event coming,
yeah.
a really cool talk. Is that what it is?
Yes. So we are very honored to have Fulbright scholars visit us every so often. And this fall, we have a visiting scholar from France, a scholar named Chloé Leplantine, who is completing her project looking at archival materials on the Tlingit language and other North American indigenous languages. She's taking a Tlingit course, and she's producing a documentary about the findings that she will have. So she's following up on a researcher who came to this area of Alaska in the 1950s, and so looking at material that researcher had collected, analyzing it through a number of different perspectives, anthropologic perspective, sociological perspectives, historic, linguistic perspectives. And she's actually going to present her project in December in the Glacier View Room on December 4th from noon to 1 p.m.
Noon to 1 p.m.,
yeah.
December 4th in the Glacier View Room.
Yeah.
And that's going to be really cool findings to see what she's discovered.
Well, I mean, she is a very interesting person. I've spent a little bit of time getting to know her. She actually brought her family here, so they're living on campus.
Oh, wow.
I think it will be very interesting, and we are excited to have her present some of her work.
Excellent. That's so good. That's December 4th. There's the Greece trip, which is in March. You can find out more about that. And then, of course, there's also the cool Carver Wayne Price out at the university making a dugout canoe in collaboration with Gold Belt Foundation. That's fantastic. Dr. Aparna Palmer, thanks so much for coming in and sharing everything with us. And, of course, you mentioned Tlingit language. I always like to plug this. The classes to learn Tlingit, Haida, Tsimshian, they're free at the university. You can find out more about that at the university.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah. Those are ongoing classes that you can find out about. But Gunath Cheech, it's always a pleasure to have you come in the studio and update us.
Oh, thank you. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and Gunath Cheech to you as well.
Thank you so much. Gunath Cheech. That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, previews of more upcoming performances from Perseverance Theater and some special public market entertainment from the Juno Cello Choir. Yep, public market is just around the corner next week. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. You can find this show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. You can also find live stream archives of the stream on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you and Alaska Airlines Club 49, Anson Gress, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Gunath Cheech. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Have a wonderful Thursday evening.